My name is Legacy from the Perfect 10 Club, and you're listening to 90.7 WGXC Acra.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network in sports.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acra, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show on Friday, September 17th. Today we will hear from Coxsackie resident Maeve McCool from CREATE, the Arts Council for Greene, Columbia, and Schoharie Counties. Maeve speaks with Green Nation host Mabel Bremejo and Leslie Ritter, and we'll hear that after the local news. Plus, we'll also hear all about the Latinx Festival to celebrate Hispanic heritage this Sunday in Hudson. David Quitsusica, the community navigator at the Columbia County Sanctuary Movement, weighs in on that event Sunday. And Jenny Getty and Amanda Lees preview what's going on in movie theaters this weekend. This all starts after the local news, which is next on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
News. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
And the moon turns the blood. The stream runs through. And the moon turns the blood. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns the blood. The stream runs through. And the moon turns the blood. This is the network. Network.
This is the news.
This is the network.
This is the news.
This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the
follow WGXC on Facebook or Twitter. There will be constant updates of on-air interviews, community news, weather warnings, and more at twitter.com/WGXC. And those WGXC Twitter messages also go to facebook.com/WGXC radio. Tune in to WGXC on 90.7 and at the web at WGXC.org.
Do you have 17 cents a day to support a platform for many diverse voices to have their say on the local airwaves? Just 17 cents a day, a monthly $5 recurring donation, can help keep local youth on the air at WGXC 90.7 FM. Your monthly sustaining support will keep the airwaves full of music from around the world and around the corner. WGXC needs 500 sustaining supporters to make sure there is one spot on the dial where the community can have access to its own airwaves. Make your pledge today at WGXC.org/donate and do your part to protect an important source of local news, information, and entertainment. With just 17 cents a day, you will do your part to protect your favorite frequency. Become a sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org/donate now.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of FET Press in Hudson, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. Natasha Vaughn Holdrich is reporting for Columbia Green Media that early voting is coming to Kinderhook, according to Columbia County's expansion plan. The County Board of Elections has received an early voting expansion grant of nearly $19,000 to add early voting sites within the county. The grant funding supports the addition of a polling site in the county's largest voting area, which is Kinderhook. Quote, "We're now having to have an early voting site in our largest municipality," unquote, County Republican Elections Commissioner Kelly Miller Simmons said. Quote, "So that will mean we will have two early voting sites, and this grant will help us to cover the costs," unquote. Early voting allows voters to cast their ballots during the 9-day early voting period from October 23rd to October 31st this year. Quote, "The schedules are arranged so there's weekend voting, there's weekday voting, there's some evening voting," unquote. Columbia County Democratic Elections Commissioner Ken Dow said, quote, "Trying to make it available to people with different schedules. That's why the hours vary from day to day," unquote. New York began allowing early voting in 2019. In 2019, Columbia County had 3,371 early voters. In 2020, that number increased to 6,000 people, Dow said. Until now, the only place to vote early in the county was at the Columbia County office building on State Street in Hudson. The Kinderhook early voting site will be at the Martin H. Glynn Municipal Building in Valencia. Any registered voter in Columbia County can vote early at either location. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
Sam Rowden's report for Columbia Green Media that the City of Hudson Industrial Development Authority approved on September 15th a payment in lieu of taxes for the Galvin Foundation to build new affordable housing. That approval came after the Hudson Planning Board on September 14th voted for a negative declaration for the project on the State Environmental Review. The group proposes to build 84 apartments priced at market, 54 apartments priced for low-income, and 20 priced for moderate-income tenants on 7th Street and State Street. The project includes 1,000-square-foot ground-floor commercial spaces with a preference given to women and minority-owned businesses. The group said in a prepared statement, and I quote, "The Hudson-Catskill Housing Coalition supports this project because the need for housing is dire in Hudson," end quote. "The City of Hudson and the entire Hudson Valley face an affordable housing crisis and older units falling off the market due to decay or being shifted to short-term rentals. That latter trend is fueled by a shortage of hotel rooms, and it has all been made worse by a wave of new buyers during the pandemic. All that has made property values skyrocket locally, pricing out long-time residents." Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
Mid-Hudson News is reporting that several local police departments were called out to the Brookwood Secure Center for Youth in Claverack to restore peace during the early afternoon of September 15th. According to the New York State Police, law enforcement gained control of the situation and the facility was secured. Three staff members suffered non-life-threatening injuries and were transported to Columbia Memorial Hospital for treatment. None of the residents were injured. The City of Hudson Police Department, Chatham Police Department, Greenport Police Department, and other police departments and EMS agencies assisted at the scene. The investigation is ongoing, according to the state police, and will be updated as soon as additional information becomes available. The Brookwood Center on Spook Rock Road is operated by the New York State Office of Children and Family Services and houses male and female youths who, while under the age of 16 and now 16 and 17 years of age, were convicted and sentenced in adult criminal court or family court as part of the Raise the Age legislation. Depending upon the sentence, youth may remain in the OCFS custody until they are 21 years of age. Read more about this story at MidHudsonNews.com.
William J. Kimball reports in the Daily Freeman that a lethal bug-transmitted deer disease has been found in Ulster, Dutchess, Greene, Columbia, Nassau, Oswego, and Suffolk counties. There are also suspected cases in Albany, Rensselaer, and six other counties. Deer catch episodic hemorrhagic disease from midge bites. State officials in a press release said, and I quote, "The disease is not spread from deer to deer, and humans cannot be infected by deer bites or bites from midges," end quote. Five dead deer were found late last week at Oakland Lake in Hudson. Town of Saugerty Supervisor Fred Costello said earlier this week, and I quote, "Folks with ponds are experiencing regular finds of carcasses."
Animals that are suffering the illness become very thirsty. They seek out bodies of water, and they die a short time later, end quote. The first hard frost should kill the midges and eliminate the disease for the season. Until then, though, expect more dead deer locally. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman.
Paul Nelson is reporting for the Times Union that the Niskayuna Town Board is now divided as the decision of who will be chosen as the town's next police chief looms. Now that the town has thrown out disciplinary charges against acting police chief Michael Stevens, he will likely emerge with only a letter of counseling in his personnel file, according to several people familiar with the situation. The charges against Stevens were thrown out because police officers refused to testify against him. A letter of counseling is the formal documentation of an infraction that the person is required to sign, according to information online. Despite the controversy around his candidacy, it is being said Stevens had the backing of at least one town board member. The other two finalists for the position of police chief are Sergeants Todd Frenyea and Jordan Cook Coxon. Three members of the board and Supervisor Yasmin Said must agree on a candidate by September 17th. Niskayuna Police Benevolent Association President Anthony Camanzo did not return a call on September 15th. Last year, the union overwhelmingly approved a vote of no confidence against Stevens. The upset over Stevens' disciplinary record is the latest setback for a department that has seen two chiefs retired surrounded by controversy in a little more than a year, another file a complaint, and the resignation of an officer who encouraged others to quit because of low morale brought on by an alleged lack of support from town officials. Read more about this story in the Times Union.
Nick Reisman reports at New York State of Politics that Governor Kathy Hochul said on September 16th that up to 1,143 Afghan refugees could be relocating to New York. The number of refugees is based on new guidance by the U.S. Department of State, Hochul said. That number includes about 100 people in the Albany area. Governor Hochul said, and I quote, "New York has a storied history of welcoming those seeking a safe haven from violence and persecution. A proud tradition our state continues today by helping evacuees from Afghanistan rebuild. The heart-wrenching images and stories of people fleeing their homeland were a call to action that New York State is more than willing to answer. We welcome our new Afghan friends with open arms and pledge to provide them with the assistance they can rely on to rebuild anew," end quote. The United States gave up on a 20-year war in Afghanistan recently after thousands of citizen and military deaths and trillions of taxpayer dollars spent. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics.
And Spectrum News reports that a man was quickly arrested September 16th after the Albany Black Lives Matter mural was spray-painted with the letters KKK. Ian Rawlinson, 43, of Albany, was charged with fourth-degree criminal mischief as a hate crime and is expected to be arraigned September 17th in city court. He was arrested on Madison Avenue near Lark Street around 3:40 p.m., while the mural is located on Lark Street between Hudson Avenue and Lancaster Street. Recently, stickers promoting the white supremacist group Patriot Front have been found in Hudson, Germantown, Chatham, and Philmont. Read more about this story at the Spectrum News website.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day. Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Friday, a slight chance of showers between 7 a.m. and 1 p.m., and then a chance of showers and thunderstorms after 1 p.m. Otherwise, it will be mostly cloudy with a temperature high near 76 degrees. Patchy fog before 2 a.m. Friday night. Otherwise, it will be mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 63 degrees. And on Saturday, a chance of showers and thunderstorms after 2 p.m. Otherwise, it will be mostly sunny with the temperature high near 79 degrees. And Saturday night, a chance of showers and thunderstorms before 8 p.m. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 61 degrees.
And that is your weather update from WGXC 90.7 FM radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
You have tuned into many creative community voices on the radio Friday, September 17th on 90.7 FM, including at 11 a.m. It's time for the Global Agogo Show with Bartholomew Atiso, Hannah Standiford, and Los Chapaclacs among the featured artists today. Then at noon, after the local news, we go live to Hudson, to the basement of the First Presbyterian Church, where Jared Wegechud should be standing by with the Sugar Shack Jukebox with all sorts of brand new R&B, soul, funk, rock, reggae, and more. 2 p.m., Warren Walker is the featured artist on the Data Cult Audio Show. 3 p.m., we'll hear all sorts of new music for an hour, including brand new tracks from Low, Circuit de U, and Aaron Dillaway, among others. 4 p.m., it's time for the WGXC Afternoon Show, and it's a busy one today with interviews with Melissa Gelly and Julia Jorn's Hudson Valley Word of Mouth segment. Plus, we'll hear all about the local real estate market and how it's driving out locals. We'll preview the Latinx Festival Sunday in Hudson with a member of the Columbia County Sanctuary Movement, and we'll learn more about Hispanic Heritage Month with Dr. Jose E. Cruz from SUNY Albany. Stay tuned. It's all on WGXC 90.7 FM, your creative community radio station.
To get a local event mentioned on All Together Now, go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page, and copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
Tune in or turn out Saturday, October 23rd to John Cage's Rose Art Mix, realized by artist Aaron Dillaway at Bard College in Annandale-on-Hudson. The performance will be at the John Cage Trust from noon to sunset with collaborating tape players including Twig Harper from Nautical Almanac, Rosie Actor Engel, John Weiss, Mike Colino, and C. Lavender. John Cage's Rose Art Mix was composed in 1965 for a performance at Brandeis University's Rose Art Gallery. The score is correspondence between John Cage and Alvin Lussier concerning preparations for the concert utilizing tape loops. Aaron Dillaway, who's known for his work in Wolf Eyes and many other collaborations, was a former Wave Farm resident who worked with tape loops and cart machines in his residency in Accra. Anyone attending this event must show proof of vaccination and register to make an appointment to be scheduled to see the show. You can find out more about the Saturday, October 23rd performance of John Cage's Rose Art Mix, realized by artist Aaron Dillaway, in the WGXC Community Calendar online at wgxc.org.
Lithuanian composer Martin Rock engineers the collision of ambient noise and cinematic forces in his music, and we'll venture into deep space with him on the next Deep Threes. Plus, music from Christina Pato, VJ Iyer, William Onye Bohr, and Nina Cherry. Deep Threes. Where will the music take you?
Tune in to Deep Threes after the noon news on Monday at WGXC 90.7 FM.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Friday, September 17th. Mid-60s on the thermometer kicked the day off early this morning. Could be some fog in isolated places out there. No rain is expected and a high of 74 happens around 4 p.m. Dew points in the mid-60s will make it feel muggy. Overnight it gets a little more humid and temperatures fall to 64 degrees. Tomorrow we'll have a high of 80 with a chance of isolated rain showers in the afternoon. Saturday night, temperatures fall to the upper 50s, bringing down the dew point for Sunday, making it a dry, comfortable day to be outside with a high of 76. For those still active in the garden, this is the last good week to plant things like kohlrabi, lettuce, and spinach. Next week will be radishes and garlic. Pollen levels for today will be almost non-existent. High tide will be at 12:27 a.m., then low tide will be at 7:16 a.m. High tide again at 1:06 p.m. and low tide again at 7:27 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 70 degrees. Sunset today will be at 6:50 p.m. and sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:33 a.m. Looking way up, we see the recent coronal mass ejection pass was negligible and we're waiting to see any magnetic interaction from traveling through its wake. Solar wind speed is currently 346.7 kilometers per second at 14.9 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently terrible. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 2. Quiet. There have been 2 days since the last sunspot. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Michael Shimidis of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Just what is it that you want to do?
Well, we want to be free. We want to be free to do what we want to do. We want to be free to ride. And we want to be free to ride our machines without being hassled by the man.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
This Sunday, there will be the region's first Latinx festival to celebrate Hispanic heritage and culture. Joining us to talk about this is David Kitwisaka of Columbia County Sanctuary Movement. Welcome, David.
Hi, it's good to be here. How are you?
Good, good. So from September 15th to October 15th is Hispanic Heritage Month. Can you tell us about a bit about the celebration that the Columbia County Sanctuary Movement is a part of to celebrate this?
Yeah, I would love to. Yeah. So, first things first, my name is David and I'm a community navigator for Columbia County Sanctuary Movement. I've been a volunteer for a couple of years, and I've joined the team. Very excited to be on board. And we are hosting Hudson's first ever parade and festival for the Latinx community this Sunday, September 19th. It's going to be from 12 to 6. And it's been a dream of one of our founders, Juan Sanchez, who has lived in Hudson for about 20 years now. And he's always wanted to see something like this happen. And we're very excited to be able to finally do this with help from the city itself and the Hudson Tourism Board. Everybody's on board to celebrate the community, you know. After the disproportionate effect of COVID and the economic crisis on our community and the essential work, the workers, they work so hard to get us through it. We think that they all deserve to be celebrated and to celebrate at this event. So that's what mostly this is geared for, is a celebration of the Latinx community in our area. And to let people know we are here, we celebrate, everybody is invited, and also in celebration of Latin Heritage Month, of course.
Who will be performing and what kind of events will we see at the festival?
Great. Yeah. So it's going to start out with a parade that's starting in Hudson. It's going to start at 7th Street Park and Warren Street. We're going to meet there around noon. Members of the community are going to get together. We, as of now, have seven or more countries being represented in our parade. And we're going to start at 7th Street Park and march down Warren Street all the way to Henry Hudson Waterfront Park, where our celebration will take place. And we have great artists like Taina Asili, who is a Albany-based musician. She does really great music. I definitely recommend everybody check out one of her songs called No Es Mi Presidente, which is one of my favorite things to just bop to around the house. We have a traditional Latin folklore music group called Trio Candela will be there. A mariachi band called Mariachi Mexicano Tradicional will be there as well. And they will be also be marching in the parade. So that's going to be great to march with. A Mexican dance group called Ilusiones de Mi Tierra will also be performing. Another group called Triquis Sin Fronteras is another Mexican dance group that we're excited to have joined with us. We're going to have a Zumba class on stage led by Ana Paula Gallien. And then our DJ is DJ Gio, who will be performing throughout the day. We're really excited to have these people on to perform throughout the festival. We're going to have vendors there. I'm really excited to announce that a lot of Mexican and Latin restaurants in our area will be at the event selling their foods for everybody. It's Magdalena's restaurant in Valencia will be there. Casa Latina, based in Hudson, will be there. Yerba Buena, based in Castleton, will be there. Angel's Latin Restaurant, based in Catskill. And Tequila Sunrise from Valencia will also be there selling their food. We've got a lot of artists who will be selling their wares and accessories. Ones I want to name off the top of my head are Loida Moreno. She will be selling jewelry there. And we have traditional Mexican clothes, belts, and accessories sold by Luz Ruiz and members of the group Triqui Sin Fronteras, who I mentioned will be performing, will be there as well. Vida Backpacks will be there. Community member Margarita Espinosa will be selling bags, scarves, earrings. Kendra Fowler will be there selling croc jewelry, which I'm actually excited for, bracelets, assorted items. Alternative, which is a store out of Albany, will be there selling indigenous clothing and jewelry. And we'll definitely have a clown there. Estrita Guisa will be there. She is a clown who does face painting, balloons, children's activities, and the Hudson Youth Department will be there as well, you know, as a presence, being there for our children. I think that we've got a lot in store. A lot of members of the community can look forward to great food, great music, and to pick up some great wares from local Latinx artists in the area.
Sounds like a great festival. A lot of good food.
Oh, yeah.
We put a lot of work into it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Definitely.
Is this really the region's first Latinx festival, or is it just Hudson's?
So I will say it's Hudson's. I know that a couple of years ago we had a Latinx festival, but I can say with full confidence that this is our first ever parade and festival. So a celebration throughout the city. That's what I will say with 100% confidence that we're really excited to bring that to the region.
Sounds really, really cool. Part of this festival is also to bring awareness to causes such as the Fund Excluded Workers. Is it not?
It is actually, yeah. And I'm glad you brought that up, because one of the things that Columbia County Sanctuary Movement does is we organize with immigrants and allies in our area to collectively support, empower, and defend our communities. One of the ways we did that was we got behind this coalition who wanted to fund our workers who, through the pandemic, went to work as essential workers, but never received a stimulus check, never received any help from the government. So last winter and last spring, we organized, we protested for them. There was a hunger strike that we supported our members who went through a hunger strike in order to get the governor at the time's attention. And we won. We won that. We won the Fund for Excluded Workers. I'm also really happy to say that we've been helping people apply for the fund so they can get their well-deserved funds. And at the festival itself, we will have application assistance there. So if you would like to learn more about the fund, to see if you qualify, or if to just apply right away, well, you're more than welcome to do it at the festival.
David, that is such important work that you're doing. This is Kathy. I've got another line of questioning for you. And that is just to acknowledge that for communities to celebrate their heritage is so important, and it must be a moment of great celebration for the Latinx community in the area. But then how do you handle the inevitable issue of showcasing ethnicity, so to speak, for the dominant culture's entertainment? I imagine this is something that that your group wrestles with all the time. How do you navigate that?
So there's a thing where, if I can get personal for a second, I've lived in our area for about 4 years now. And when I first moved here, I used to live in Southern New York. When I first moved here, I had like an issue with identity because I didn't feel very much welcomed in the area. I didn't see a lot of people like myself. I'm myself a Latino. And then I found Columbia County Sanctuary Movement and I became a volunteer, and I was opened up to this world of people who want to make everybody feel equal here. Like, regardless of where you come from, regardless of the language you speak, everybody here is included. I've felt nothing but warmth and love ever since I joined Columbia County Sanctuary Movement. And I want to bring that, that feeling to everybody in the region. So that's what we're focusing on, is showing different sides to this region. And just knowing that everybody is invited, everybody is welcome. Maybe, you know, somebody will come to the festival and realize that they really like the music they're listening to. They really like the food they're eating, and then, you know, become an ally and support. So that's what we focus on, is just making sure people know that our Latinx community is here, and we support and embrace everybody.
Lovely.
Thank you, David. This is thank you for this interview. Where can listeners find more information about this festival?
Oh, yeah. So we have it all on our website, and that is sanctuarycolumbiacounty.org. You just type that in, and you'll see right there at the top of our website more information, even a countdown to the festival. Just click on those links, and you can learn more about our vendors and about our musicians who will be there at the festival.
Thank you, David. Hope to talk with you again.
Yeah, thank you for having me. This was great. Hope to see you guys there.
Thanks, David. So again, that's Sunday, this Sunday, September 12th to 12 to 4 p.m. at the Henry Hudson Riverfront Park.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
You're listening to The Morning Show on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Welcome to 2021 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
I think what we need to do right now is make sure that everyone in Virginia understands that getting the vaccine is the most important thing we can do.
Republican Virginia gubernatorial candidate Glenn Youngkin on COVID-19 vaccine mandates. Youngkin and his opponent, Democrat Terry McAuliffe, squared off Thursday night in a debate hosted by the Appalachian School of Law. Biden's shrinking approval ratings could improve the GOP's chances of winning gubernatorial races in Virginia and New Jersey. A Washington attorney who specializes in cybersecurity issues has been indicted over allegedly lying to the FBI ahead of the 2016 election in a conversation about possible ties between Donald Trump and Russia. Michael Sussman is a former federal prosecutor who works at a law firm with long-standing links to the Democratic Party. He's the second individual to be charged in special counsel John Durham's investigation into the origins of the FBI's Trump-Russia probe. Congressional Democrats on Thursday asked the heads of four major oil companies and two lobbying groups to testify on whether the industry led an effort to mislead the public and prevent action to fight climate change. Earlier this year, oil lobbyist Keith McCoy admitted some of the industry's tactics.
Did we aggressively fight against some of the science? Yes.
The lawmakers cited a study in the peer-reviewed journal Climatic Change that said 91 think tanks and advocacy organizations that downplayed global warming were funded by ExxonMobil and industry groups. In Senate testimony, U.S. gymnast Michaela Maroney lambasted the FBI and the Justice Department for how agents mishandled child sexual abuse allegations brought against convicted former USA Gymnastics Dr. Larry Nassar. Maroney identified herself as the gymnast described but not named in the report, who spoke to the FBI about her allegations in September of 2015.
Not only did the FBI not report my abuse, but when they eventually documented my report 17 months later, they made entirely false claims about what I said.
The official U.S. death toll from COVID-19 has passed 250,000 people. FDA scientists have expressed skepticism over a push by the White House to authorize third booster doses of Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine, and in a report said the vaccines currently in use still afford protection against severe disease and death. Meanwhile, the Biden administration will make COVID-19 vaccinations mandatory for all new immigrants to the United States beginning on October 1st. I'm Nadia Ramlagan for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Welcome to Dim the Lights with Jenny and Amanda radio show, where we talk about movies here on WGXC 90.7 FM. My name is Amanda.
My name is Jenny.
And, you know, we just love chit-chatting about movies. We talk a little bit about what we've been watching lately. And I'm realizing right now that I forgot to pull up movie times.
You know, me too. It literally just occurred. Let me tell you about a new movie I watched while you pull that up.
Yeah, I'm going to pull it up because I didn't watch anything new.
Yeah, totally. I only have one for you, but it's one of the big ones. I saw Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings, the new Marvel movie, and it was really fun. I enjoyed it a lot. If you're a regular listener of the show, you may know that most of the more recent Marvel movies I have found lacking. I'm not that interested in them, but I really enjoyed it. It's really fun. It's like a little long for me. But the casting's really great. I love the main character's dad, and also the like kind of main foil of the movie is played by Tony Leung, who you may recognize from so many other movies. He's like in a ton of the big Wong Kar-wai films, and he's just amazing. He's so magnetic and like also extremely hot, and really so like really elevates the movie in a way that is amazing. It also stars, or not stars, she's a supporting character of another one of my lifetime crushes, Michelle Yeoh, is in it. It's got a lot of my crushes in it, so I had a good time.
Yes.
But yeah, it's really cute. I would recommend it.
I am really excited to see it. I have not seen it or any new movies lately at all, which feels really wild. Something must have snuck in there, but I just can't think of what that is. But I did pull up what's showing, first of all, at the Hudson Movieplex 8. And oftentimes we sent people to their Facebook to see showtimes, but it looks like they do have a website now. That's spotlightcinemas.com.
Wonderful.
And the times for tonight, and I assume for the rest of this week, or the movies showing, are Malignant, Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings, Paw Patrol, the movie, Candyman, the new Candyman, of course, Respect, Jungle Cruise, and Free Guy.
Oh.
And then over at the Wyndham Movie Theater, we have, in Wyndham, New York, we have Cry Macho with Clint Eastwood. Never heard of it in my life.
Nor have I.
Malignant and Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings. And then what do we got? We usually do the Lyceum as well.
Yeah, I don't have Lyceum, but I do have the Greenville Drive-In here ready to go. So I'm going to start with
that. Tell me.
At the Greenville Drive-In, great news. We have this weekend, on Friday and Saturday, An American Werewolf in London. Love it.
Oh, fun.
So good. And then next Saturday, the 25th, we have Catch Me If You Can. And guess what? It's screening for free. And I've never seen it, so I would really like to see it.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a really very, very fun, based on a true story movie.
Yeah. And then we also have that same weekend on Sunday, there's a film called Helvetica, also free. And then the following weekend on Friday, October 1st, oh, baby, it's The Lost Boys. You love to see it.
Wow, we're really getting into just the best season.
It's time. It's coming.
Oh my gosh, I'm excited.
Here is Jaded Azarides, Columbia County poet Karen Schomer and Minutemen bassist Mike Watt, with the song Yes Here from their 2021 album Forthright.
A woman's nest is anger. woman's love is anger. A woman's nest is anger. The street is lined with buildings I can't enter. Each house a petty crime or ill-advised plot. A way station between having and not having. A woman's lust is anger. A woman's touch is anger. A woman's lust is anger. After a while, the scenery repeats itself. Same buildings, but vaguely different. A sign stripped off to reveal an older one underneath. Furniture dumped on the sidewalk. A woman's home is anger. A woman's egg is anger. A woman's home is anger. I pass a warehouse, a woman's egg with dirty white anger. Siding in unbroken strips facing the street. Not a single door or window. Now an orange streetlight flickers. A woman's nest is anger. A woman's love is anger. A woman's nest is anger. Now a utility pole buzzes. Anger. Now it starts to snow.
Welcome to Green Nation, an informational segment stoking the fire for a sustainable future for Green County. My name is Leslie Ritter.
And I'm Mabel Bermejo.
Today, we'll be talking with Maeve McCool of Cooksackie. Maeve is Grants Manager for CREATE, Council on the Arts, and she's here to share some useful information for arts and events nonprofits in Greene, Columbia, and Schoharie counties. So welcome, Maeve.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Tell us a little about your role as Grants Manager.
Sure. So I've been at CREATE Council on the Arts for about a year and a half. And my main role here is to run our community arts grants. So this is an annual grant program that's funded through New York State Council on the Arts through their statewide community re-grant program. So it's a pretty major program that's available in every county. And we serve Greene, Columbia, and Schoharie counties with this state public arts funding.
So this isn't money that's coming into CREATE from people in the community, or these are fairly substantial grants coming from the state?
Yes. So these are public funds from the state, and the grants are up to $5,000 in each of the three programs that it funds. So each year, artists and organizations throughout the three counties that we serve will apply to support all different types of programs like concerts and workshop series and art projects. And they apply to three different categories in this grant, those being project support, so mainly for nonprofits, arts education projects, which are with students either in school or out of school, and then individual artist grants.
Fantastic. That's great.
That is great. And we understand that there's actually a current mini grant right now that is due in October. Could you tell us more about that one, that first one?
Absolutely. So the recent mini grant that we have is due October 1st, and this is part of NISCA's Restart New York program. So coming out of the pandemic, NISCA was able to bring a lot more funds to artists throughout the state to help them start reopening and having more in-person programs. So this funding, it's really quick turnaround, but it's due October 1st, and it's for nonprofits only, grants of up to $1,000 for in-person events. This could be like a performance or a presentation, an artist talk, anything that's bringing people together in a space.
I also noticed when I was looking over information about this mini grant that it mentions events happening in June and July. So if something already happened, can I apply now?
Yeah, so this restart funding is for the fiscal year of 2021. So that could be if you have an event coming up anytime before the end of the year, or it can fund things that have already happened. As long, again, as it's in person and you're a nonprofit in Greene, Columbia, Schoharie counties, we definitely encourage you to apply. We're really hoping to get these funds out and assisting people in the community, paying performers and artists so they can get back on their feet.
And how do they apply?
You can apply on our website for the mini grant. That would be createcouncil.org. And if anyone needs any assistance with applying to this program or to our general SCR Community Arts Grants program, which will be due later in the year in December, feel free to reach out to us.
That's great, because I know not everybody has that grant writing gene. I certainly don't.
It's a mystery to most of us, I think.
Definitely. And we really try to see that and help people. This grant and our organization in general really is trying to support people in these small hamlets and these small towns across these three counties to grow and bring the arts to their communities and really support that cultural life in all of these different distant areas. So my whole job here is really to help people learn how to apply, to help them edit their resumes and edit their descriptions and their budgets and all of the materials that go into this, so they can really help to grow their ideas and gain stability with these public funds, which I think is a really awesome opportunity.
So what, I think you have a couple of others that are open right now as well, right? A couple of other grants?
Yeah, so all of our open grants at the moment, we have that mini grant that's just for 2021 due October 1st, but our big main grant that we do is the Community Arts Grants Program, that NISCA re-granting program. And that is going to be due on December 17th, 2021 for projects happening throughout 2022. So again, that's with those three different project areas being project support, individual artists, and arts education projects. And it funds up to $5,000. So that's our big main grant program. We also have our Green County Initiative program, which will be due later, probably after the new year, that funds nonprofits with projects or general operating support only in Green County.
So, Maeve, can artists or organizations contact you directly to set up a person-to-person conversation about the process, like if they have questions?
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I'm here to do, is to help people with their applications. So people can reach out to me for one-on-one meetings to talk about, you know, brainstorm ideas for what they want to apply for or propose for funding. They can reach out to me to help look over their budget, talk on the phone one-on-one, meet in person. We also are going to be having Q&A sessions in each of the three counties, and those dates are going to be all through October and November, listed on our website at different libraries and local places. I will also mention, if you're applying to the Community Arts Grants Program, our main grant, we have a series of grant info videos on our YouTube page describing the entire process of how to apply, and it is required to watch these videos. In the past, if you've applied to this program, you'll know that we had these in-person seminars that were required that were really kind of a hassle to get out to. So these videos, you can watch them on your own time and learn every different piece of applying to this grant program.
Can you remind me, what's your email and phone number again?
Sure. So I can be reached at maeve@createcouncil.org. So that's maeve@createcouncil.org. And our Create phone number is 518-943-3400. And my extension is 102.
And is the YouTube channel also called Create?
Yes, it's called Create Council in the Arts. And you can just find any links to our YouTube page on our website as well, which is createcouncil.org.
One-stop shopping.
Yeah, we try to make it easy. So in the Community Arts Grants Program, each year we receive $126,000 from New York State Council on the Arts that is then dispersed throughout the three different counties, depending on how many people apply. And again, those grants are up to $5,000. So there's a lot of money going to these different counties to support all different types of programs. And once people apply and submit their application, if they are eligible, the review process for this grant includes different panels in each of the three separate counties with community members from your area who are reading in your entire application, looking through all of the different applicants and deciding where they want the public funds to go in their county and what they want to support. So keeping that in mind, if you're applying, the panelists tend to really love these community projects that are really supporting the community, bringing people together, supporting people in ways that maybe they don't get normally.
And also, could you give us an example of what a community project looks like? Like maybe someone who did one this past year?
Yeah, a few examples of grantees. So you might know the Dayada International Folklore Theater in Hudson. They are a grantee of ours, and they bring kids and adults together to do these amazing performances with the public, really beautiful, creative performances. There are other projects going, like individual artist projects. You might know David McIntyre, who's in Hudson, and he made this beautiful sculpture with different paintings in this nature area. It's really gorgeous. In Greene County, one of our last grantees was the Greenville Drive-In, who does their QWERTY Festival. It's a typewriter festival each year where they bring a typewriter orchestra, which is really fantastic. So they have poetry going on and typewriter music. And yeah, it's a great time. In Schoharie County, there is Clinkhart Hall, who has their Sharon Springs Poetry Festival every year. Another awesome grantee who's been a grantee for a long time, bringing poetry out to Schoharie County.
That sounds great. I didn't realize that the Greenville Drive-In was a nonprofit.
Yeah, so actually they are not. If you are not a nonprofit, but you're hoping to apply to these funds, you can apply with a fiscal sponsor or a community partner. So for instance, if you're just an individual and you want to do a community project, you could reach out to your local library or a local nonprofit to support you and extend their nonprofit status to you so that you can apply. The process is kind of confusing, especially for the first time, but that's why we're here to help you through that process and help connect you to people who can support you in applying.
Oh, that's great to know. So a for-profit business that wanted to do something specifically for the community could just find a partner to apply.
Well, not a for-profit business, but an individual
person. Oh, an individual. Okay. Yeah. Okay. That's good to know.
No, that is really good to know, because we were wondering about that. Like, how do individuals who have community project ideas apply if they're not a nonprofit themselves? But there are working artists who want to do community projects. So that was one of our questions.
So a for-profit can partner with a nonprofit to co-actively present a community event.
Yeah, okay. As long as that partner is in the same county as you. And the project is happening in the county where funds are being dispersed and everything.
All good information.
I do want to add, for individuals who are applying to this type of funding and don't have a partner, we're really here to help people grow professionally as well. So we have a lot of unincorporated groups who are applying with sponsors who are working towards becoming nonprofits. And then those nonprofits who do apply to this funding, we try to encourage them to look for other grant sources and eventually apply directly to NISCA themselves. We really see this grant as a way for people to grow into larger and bigger, more wonderful things.
So NISCA is the gateway to more funding.
Yeah, we hope so. Yeah, we want people to grow their funding. This funding is only for project support, not operational funds, not general operating. So we really try to help people grow into those more sustainable ways of keeping their projects alive.
So for instance, if a musician wants to put together a performance with their group, they would need to partner with a nonprofit for that, or they can just apply as artists directly?
Yeah, it kind of depends on the type of project they want to do. So if an individual musician wanted to compose a piece or make some type of artwork, I might suggest that they apply directly to the individual artist grant. So that's for only individuals who receive the money directly, but that grant is only up to $2,500. The arts education grant goes up to $3,000 and the project support category goes up to $5,000. So that is the largest funding opportunity in these three categories. So if that person wanted to do something on a larger scale and involve more of the community in this process, more artists, wanted to do concert series, then I might point them towards the project support category where they could get more funding and able to do more of those things.
And speaking of NISCA, what does that stand for?
NISCA is the New York State Council on the Arts, and they serve the entire state with all different types of funding opportunities directly. And this statewide community re-grant program is one project that they have that funds this community arts grants that we have here.
So basically, CREATE is serving as an agent for this larger organization on their behalf, saying, okay, here's our lump sum, $126,000. And now we'll do the work of individually finding the more local people. And then in that sense, it kind of encompasses more of New York State, right?
Yeah, definitely. So we are a re-grant partner of theirs. And if you are looking for funds in your area, but you don't live in Greene, Columbia, or Schoharie counties, there are different councils throughout the state and different nonprofits throughout the state who are those other partners who can provide that state funding in their area as well.
Is there a list with all the different ones in New York State that people could look up if they weren't in one of our particular counties?
Yeah. So if you go onto the NISCA website, they have a whole page describing this program, as well as links to all of the different re-grantee sites throughout the state.
Is there anything that you want to make sure we include? Let people know about?
to summarize the Q&A sessions that we have coming up and when the deadline is. So if you're interested in applying to the Community Arts Grants Program, we hope that you'll visit our website, createcouncil.org, and you can find all of our grant info videos there so you can learn how to apply. You can find the dates and locations and the registration forms to go to our Q&A sessions that are going to be held throughout October and November. And remember that the application is due on December 17th at midnight. So I hope to see your application in there, and I hope to see lots of awesome artists and organizations apply this year.
And let's not forget the other little mini grant one that's due in October that organizations also have access to. And they can do that at the Create website as well, Maeve?
Yeah, so all of our grant opportunities are on our website, createcouncil.org. You'll see grants on our website there, and all the upcoming opportunities are going to be listed there. So that mini grant for nonprofit events is due October 1st, and it grants up to $1,000.
And that runs from July through the end of the year. And if you've already had your event in July or August, you can still apply retroactively. That feels like an important detail. You didn't necessarily miss it.
Thank you so much for joining us, Maeve. This has been awesome. And if you wanted to share your contact information again, that would be great for our listeners.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's really awesome to be able to share this more of the community. And again, my name is Maeve McCool. I'm the grants manager at Create, and you can reach me at maeve@createcouncil.org. So that's maeve@createcouncil.org. And our phone number is 518-943-3400.
Thanks
again. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Jaded Azarides is Columbia County poet Karen Schomer and legendary bass player Mike Watt from the Minutemen. This is from their 2021 record, Forthright. The song is called An Adult in His Own House is Also a Child.
He runs up the stairs two at a time. His hand skims the banister. His small boots leave dirt. His mother calls from the kitchen, but he doesn't answer. He needs to find something in his room, the one thing that will prove to his friend he isn't a liar. He looks in plastic bins filled with action figures and trading cards, but it isn't there. He looks under the bed where he stuffs unfinished homework and soiled clothes he doesn't want his mother to find. He opens the closet door, and there's so much stuff. Boxes and suitcases rammed into piles. Outgrown coats. Cracked leather shoes. His father's old suits. Funeral clothes draped in tissue paper. That the act of looking becomes a mountain. The house becomes a mountain house, craggy and peaked, damp and smelling of old leaves and metallic water. He is lost here. He needs a path out of this damp, dripping place, threaded with black streams that lead deep underground. He climbs, and the way is steep, the earth loose and strung with thick roots. He finds a toehold on a boulder and drags himself onto a ledge. Breathless, he scrambles for a vantage, loses his balance and tips forward on sheer, glistening rocks.